welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, delivering programs from radio's golden era. Mark Lavernier with you for this hour of horror. Later on, we'll enjoy a broadcast of The Hermit's Cave. But first, it's Macabre, produced by and for the Armed Forces Radio Service. This is the sixth episode in the short-lived series called The Avenger.
In a spectrum of the universe. When he ventures beyond this limit, he is in the unknown, a realm where strange forces are brought into play. When man attempts to misuse these forces, he is sometimes destroyed. This is Macabre. Far East Network presents, in special performance, Macabre. Tonight's story, The Avenger.
The night is warm and dark. Except for the moon, vainly trying to pierce a thickening sky. There is a lonely light in a library window at Hale Manor. Outside, in the vine-strewn garden, a dark figure steals quietly to the flagstone terrace, pauses as if sniffing a scent, and then moves in an animal crouch toward the light in the window. Dr. Burton Hale sits in the library, reading, unaware that, had he glanced at the window, he might have seen something pass. Something with a frightful look. Something that now was trying the knob of the French doors leading from the terrace to the library.
Who's there? Who's there, I say?
Strange, it sounded like someone on the terrace. Perhaps I'd better see.
Is anyone out there? Who is on this terrace?
Dan Forrest.
Dan, what the... Quick!
I'll be in.
What's wrong with you, Dan?
Time to talk. Lock the door. Turn off the light.
Now, just a minute.
Do as I say, Doc. Good. But, you see anything out the window?
What am I supposed to look for?
I'm serious. Something tried to kill me. I barely made it over here.
You're overwrought. Sit down, Dan. I'll get you a sedative.
I'm a friend. In trouble. Not a patient, Doc.
Have you been drinking?
That's a great idea. Scotch. Make it big.
All right.
You could use one. Have a seat. I'll be with you in a minute.
Yeah? Thanks.
I'm not trying to pry into your personal affairs, Dan, but I really think you owe me an explanation.
Yeah, I do.
I've known you 20 years. You're as sound as a dollar.
What makes you think that someone is trying to kill you?
Judge for yourself. Started yesterday morning. I was crossing Third Avenue. I just stepped off the curb and a parked cab tried to run me down.
Coincidence.
Wait, there's more. Today, at a construction project, a beam slipped from a crane. Almost crushed me.
Dan, accidents will happen.
It doesn't stop there. Tonight, I left my hotel room about 8. As I walked past a dark alley, a shot rang out. Bullet missed by inches. I hopped into my car and made a bad dash for your place. But whatever is after me followed. It's out there, in your garden.
Oh, this shot may have been a backfire.
With a ricochet?
Have you any idea who it might be?
No.
Dan, people need reasons to kill. You've never hurt anyone in your whole life. You're alarmed over a set of coincidences.
I tell you, something followed me here.
Could have been a policeman. You know, you did look like a burglar.
I was afraid I'd be a target in front, so I came through the garden.
What's that?
Came from the terrace. Where are you going?
Stay back. I'll have a look.
What do you see?
Be quiet, Dan.
Was it anything?
Couldn't tell. Flower pot overturned. Probably just a dog.
Sure. Dog's gonna climb that 8-foot wall out there.
You won't be satisfied until I call the police.
No, we can't do that.
Then there's something you haven't told me.
That's right, Doc.
If attempts are being made in your life, they must be stopped.
I didn't want to believe this myself. Now it's clear. You remember the trip I made to Africa last year?
Yes, you were doing research for a book.
We'd stopped for the night at the edge of a village deep in the jungle. After supper, I decided to go for a walk. It was a hot, stifling night. Another member of our party, Jeff Clayton from London, joined me. For some reason, our conversation drifted.
About the natives in this section, they don't seem unfriendly. But one never can tell, and that's why I pack an automatic on field trips such as this, just in case.
We've walked far enough, Jeff. We don't want to get too far from camp.
Oh, it's all right. Better start back. Oh, mosquitoes starting in.
You know, speaking of natives, we haven't seen a single one tonight.
They don't see many white men in this area. They're very likely avoiding us.
Wait. A clump of trees. Flash your light over there.
Right, huh? Yeah. Looks like a temple.
Mm-hmm. Come on, let's see what it is.
Take it easy, Dan. They are sometimes sticky about their temples.
We'll just have a look. There's no harm in that.
No, I guess not.
Where do you suppose they got all the white stone? It's all in white. Well built, too.
For a primitive native tribe, you might say so. They can be deucedly clever in certain ways. Look here, I don't mean to cry wolf, Dan, but the missing natives are not so missing now. Two are staring from those bushes.
Tell them we're just admiring their craftsmanship. Let's go inside.
Hold it, Dan. One of the natives is motioning to us. Don't go in, Dan. He's waving you off. I told you they'd be sticky about this.
Entertain him, Jeff. He's more your type. Take on him, Mullen. I'll just glance inside.
Don't, Dan. Come back. There'll be trouble. You're violating their sacred temple. Well, now you've done it. I don't know what they're chanting, but it's no lullaby. Quick, come out of there, Dan. Come on, get out of their temple. Dan.
Remarkable structure for the middle of a jungle.
Let's make a break for it. Uh-oh. They stopped the chant. An old man in a robe. He's walking toward us.
White man, go in sacred temple. White man evil.
He speaks good English.
He's probably taught by a missionary.
Only spirit go in temple. White man die.
Here it comes, that old hokum.
Spirit's angry. Say a white man die 12 full moons.
I say, old man, let's get back to the camp before they get far.
Allowed us to return to the camp. I didn't give it any further thought. I'm not superstitious. I don't believe in all that stuff anyway, Doc.
I don't think it has any connection. Is that all?
Not quite. In researching the temple, I'll learn something else about this particular tribe that might have a bearing. When anyone harms them, they either kill him on the spot or send a sort of avenger to perform a ceremonial execution rite. They tracked one man to South America. I forgot the whole thing until yesterday. It looks as if they didn't, though. Tomorrow is the 12th full moon since I went into that temple. From all appearances, something is after me.
Have you told anyone else about these attacks on your life?
No, there were no witnesses. The police would say coincidence.
And so would I. You're a fine mystery writer. Why don't you leave the plots on the bookshelves where they belong?
I know. That's why I've kept it to myself. I don't want to be a laughingstock. Just think. Mystery writer Daniel Forrest takes plots seriously. Runs from the Avenger instead of critics.
Good boy, Dan. Say, where's Joanne?
Waiting, I guess. I was on my way to see her when I panicked over the shot.
Why don't you keep the date?
Yeah, I think I will. And thanks for listening to my troubles.
Forget the other. It's sheer nonsense.
What if it happens again?
Then we might assume, might mind you, that your life is in danger.
You dance divinely, darling.
Yeah, I guess I do.
Dan, are you all right?
Huh?
You seem 1,000 miles away tonight.
Look, young lady, I'm relaxing. Close your eyes. Enjoy the music.
You never did say why you were so late.
Joanne, I have other things to do besides court you. I was busy.
Speaking of courting, we've known each other 4 months. We had planned to set a date.
I hadn't forgotten. I'll have to wait a few days until I settle something.
My poor darling, you are worried. Tell me what it is.
No, it's nothing, really.
Then hold me close. You can't dance and worry, too.
Joanne, I do love you.
I might allow you to kiss me, if you've tried. Dan, was anyone supposed to meet you here tonight?
Of course not. What a ridiculous question.
I've felt watched all evening.
I told you not to wear that dress.
I'm serious. Isn't that someone sitting at our table?
Yeah. Would be in the shadows. Can't tell whether it's a man or woman. Come on.
crowd on the dance floor. Pardon us, please. May we get through?
Hang on, I'll push. We're in a hurry. Let us by, please.
There's our table, Dan. It's empty. They've gone.
That's strange. We both saw someone sitting there, didn't we?
I thought so.
I could just have seen who...
Look, a burning cigarette. There was someone here.
Hmm. American brand. Doesn't tell us a thing.
Dan, please. Is there anything wrong?
I have to admit, Joanne, I'm afraid there is.
Well, what is it, darling?
Take a cab and go straight home.
Without you...
Go ahead. I'll call in the morning and explain.
But, Dan, I don't understand.
You want to get home, don't you?
Yes, of course.
Go, Joanne, while you can. Before they decide to get you, too. Never fails, dead of night. Hello? Hello? Phone did ring, didn't it? Hello? What? Hung up. It was someone. Hello? Who are you? Hello?
May I help you?
Who is this?
The night clerk, sir. Have you finished your call?
What call? What the devil are you talking about?
Someone phoned you, sir. He rang your room and left the line when you answered.
Who was it?
Sorry, sir, they didn't say.
Who didn't say? A man or a woman?
Really, sir, it was a horse vice. I couldn't say.
Always get their names first, you understand?
Yes, sir. Anything else, sir?
Yeah. Get me Plymouth 50067.
Yes, sir.
Call it imagination, if you like. No mistake now. They're after me. Who could it be? I haven't the slightest idea. Hi, Doc. Dan.
Oh. Are you all right?
Yeah, but they're closing in.
Any further developments?
Watched us all evening. Someone just called me at my hotel room.
Oh, who?
Hung up without speaking. I have no idea.
Uh-huh. Still doesn't prove anything, Dan. Might be a prankster.
No one else knows anything about the Temple episode, except you and Clayton.
Hmm. That's true. Tell you what. There's a little museum on the east side, specializes in African tribal relics, run by Professor Maringo. We'll go there in the morning. This professor is an authority on native superstitions. He may be able to help.
Yeah. Thanks, Doc.
And Dan, assuming what you said is true, we won't take any chances. Lock the windows and door. When I pick you up tomorrow, I want to find you alive.
Professor Maringo?
Oh, Dr. Hale and Mr. Forrest. Come in, come in.
We'll try not to take too much of your time.
Not at all. Won't you sit down?
Ah, thank you. I told you the basic problem on the phone. Mr. Forrest here can fill you in further.
I've read your books, Mr. Forrest. Very good. Yes, indeed. What is happening to you is like a book come true. Improbable, but true.
Are you familiar with the tribe I offended?
Let me say I know something of them. The fact they are primitive in no way dulls the intensity for their way of life. They are quiet, unassuming people, fervent believers in their own ideology. Mr. Forrest, do you know what spells and death prayers are?
I have an idea.
They are very real, indulged in by these primitive people. By these methods, they have been known to kill halfway around the world. I'm not saying you are under attack. However, if you violated the temple, you will not go free. A curse of 12 moons means you will die on the night of the 12th full moon. Or, pardon the direct reference, tonight. Now, I'm not telling you this will happen. I'm only saying it is possible.
You think they meant what they said?
I'm afraid they do. I can tell you in a few moments if you are under a prayer of death. Princess Ulanga lives with me. I rescued her from this same tribe. She became an outcast for some reason and was about to be killed. Princess! Come here, my dear. Princess, this is Daniel Forrest.
How do you do?
Excuse me. Before I could rescue her, they had cut out her tongue.
God, you lord.
Mr. Forrest violated your tribe's sacred temple. They have cursed him with death. Do you feel a spell on him? She says she will test you.
Why is she staring? Why doesn't she tell us? What are they doing to me?
Princess Ulaka, do you feel the death prayer?
For God's sake, ask her to hurry.
She says if they chant the prayer of death, she cannot feel it.
That means I'm free. Doc, you hear that? Let's pick up Joanne. I promised I'd tell her as soon as we found out.
Do not rejoice so hastily, Mr. Forrest. This test is not conclusive. But if the princess is right, it does not mean you are safe. It means they have used an alternate plan and dispatched an Avenger.
Well, right back where we started, eh?
But there's still no evidence they plan to harm you. Maybe this is all wasted motion. We're taking it too seriously.
What if they do?
Then you're in a peculiar position, Dan. The Avenger may be a perfect stranger, or anyone you've met in the past year. You'll have to be on guard against everyone.
Even Joanne?
Even Joanne.
My God, it's frightening, Doc.
Where are you meeting Joanne?
At the Lowe's State.
The theater?
Yes, Ray Cardona, a mentalist, is playing there. An old classmate of Joanne's. I thought he might be able to help me. I asked her to arrange an interview.
Oh.
What's the matter?
Count me in.
What?
I had to be sure, Dan. Now I am.
Is that making sense?
We're being followed.
Where?
Black sedan, second car back.
Can't tell who's in it.
Keep your appointment with Cardona. Then go to your hotel and stay there. I'll check with you later. If they move in, it'll be tonight.
I'm glad you're with me.
I'm a doctor. I'm with anyone, Dan, who's fighting for his life.
Mr. Forrest. I am Richard Cardona.
How do you do?
Joanne mentioned your problem. Would you step into my dressing room, please? And how have you been, Joanne?
Fine, thank you.
Be seated. What can I do for you, Mr. Forrest?
Dan's in real trouble. He needs help, Dick.
I'll do what I can. Ask me a question. I am a mentalist.
All right. I think I'm being followed.
Yes, you are.
Who is it?
That is not clear. I can't tell. Go on.
Are they connected with an African native tribe?
I see natives. I would say yes.
What are the natives doing?
They are busy.
Busy? At what?
Coming from a great distance. Hard to make it out.
Please try, Dick. We have to know.
What are they doing?
Be perfectly still for a few moments. I'm quite tired, you know. Too tired, really, to perform feats of this kind. I'll concentrate once again. This time we may learn something. There is the village again, and a group of natives. They are chanting and dancing before a white temple. Yes, a white temple. The rite is called... there it fades again.
What is it called?
Do not interrupt. It is called... strange name. The Curse of the 12 Moons. Oh, this couldn't possibly concern you, Mr. Forrest. I shouldn't invade the privacy of their rite.
What else can you see?
It's merely a death watch common to the natives of the jungle. They're avenging themselves against an evildoer. Just a moment. I may be able to see more. Let me slip into a deeper trance.
You really went into a deep one. Look how pale he is.
That's dangerous. Dick, please be careful.
What's he staring at?
Dick, stop it. come out of it.
I'm all right.
What did you see?
Joanne, do you love this man?
Yes, I do.
I ask you a question.
My friend, I am sorry for you. For both of you.
What did you see?
The angel of death. You will die tonight.
Hello?
Dan, any sign yet?
No, Doc. Very quiet here.
Good. Now stay in that hotel room and don't let anyone in. Understand? Your life may well depend on it.
Doc, the windows and doors are locked. Barricaded. I'm sitting in the dark by the phone. If someone should get in, this 45 automatic will end his troubles.
I'm across the street from your hotel at an all-night lunch counter. Your room is on the third floor. I can see the windows. I'll watch from here and call you back in case something does make a try for you. It's 11:30. Be careful and stay awake.
I'm not likely to do anything else. Thanks, Doc.
Don't let anyone in. That's very important. You've got to be realistic, Dan. We don't know who it is.
I know.
Good luck, my boy.
Thanks. Bye, Doc. Doc's right. I'm in worse shape than a prisoner in the gas chamber. At least he knows who's going to kill him, how and when. All I can do is sit in the dark and wait. Maybe my best friend. Anybody I've met since the trip last year. It's a cinch. They'll try to get me through someone. If it's someone I don't know, he'll come through the windows of the door. If it's someone I do, he'll phone from the lobby, try to come up. I just have to wait, see which it is. Full moon shining through the window shade. Curse of the 12 moons. Damn those superstitions. I didn't mean to hurt them. Why can't they forgive and forget? It's primitive gangsterism. That's it. Someone wanted to come up. Lord, I'm almost afraid to find out. Hello? Hello?
Mr. Forrest, this is Richard Cardona. I am in the lobby of your hotel. I must see you at once.
I'll bet he'd like to. I'm sorry. I can't be disturbed tonight.
You're going to be executed in a matter of moments. I may be able to help.
Good night, Mr. Cardona. And don't try to come up. First try. He may be the one. Can't be sure. But we'll know if he knocks on that door. I'll blast him to kingdom come. I'm waiting, Mr. Cardona. We'll see who's to be executed tonight. Cardona again. Now, look, you...
No time to talk. I'm Professor Marinko. Princess Ulanga and I are in the lobby.
I warn you, I won't listen to a thing you've got...
Princess has changed her mind. The curse. You are marked for death. We are coming up.
If you do, I'll kill you. That doesn't make sense. The three of them couldn't be mixed up in this. Or could they? Lord, so quiet up here. I know it's my imagination. I can almost make out headgear. Natives. Witch doctors. Watching from across the room. Smells like leaves. Flowers. Jungle. Oh, God, it's not real. If I could only turn on the light to be sure. Oh, who's that?
Dan? Dan, it's Joanne. You've got to talk to me.
Not Joanne, too. Can't be.
Darling, Dr. Hale is with me in the lobby.
Oh, God, both of them.
Dan? Dan, I know you're there. Talk to me, please. We're all down here together, Dan. Don't be afraid. They're going to get you, but not through us.
Not through them? Of course not. What a fool I've been. I've sealed myself in a tomb.
Darling, can't you hear me? There isn't any time left. We're coming up. The killer is already in your room.
Oh, already here? Of course. For God's sake, yes! Hurry, Joanne! I see. Played right into their hands. Strap myself to the death chair. Quick, the light. What's that? Native chant of death? In this room? No.
Mr.
Stop. I've got a gun.
Go ahead, Dan.
Use it.
A voice. Where are you?
Right here. Inside.
Who are you?
Man is really in two parts, Dan. Half Satan, half devil.
You are...
devil. Commissioned to kill you.
I don't believe you.
At your right hand, it dropped the gun. Now, it reaches for the butcher's knife. You used to cut more bread.
No, it won't. I'm stronger than you.
Not against the prayer of death. You're weak, Dan. You should have spent more time developing your better half.
This isn't real. I can't be struggling with myself. I'm not my own avenger, but my hand, the knife.
Moving towards our heart.
No!
The prayer of death has ended. And so have we.
Just heard Macabre, a special Far East Network presentation. Tonight's story was The Avenger. In our cast were John Buey as Dr. Hale, June Elliott as Joanne, William Verdier as Dan, and Walt Sheldon as Professor Maringo. The Great Cardona was Milton Radmilovich, and Airman First Class James Connolly was the hotel clerk. Technical supervision by Airman First Class Larry Dooley, with sound patterns by Airman First Class James Connolly. This is Air Force Sergeant Al LePage speaking. Macabre was written and directed by William Verdier.
Macabre, on Tuned to Yesterday from December 18, 1961, from the Armed Forces Radio Service. You're listening to an hour of horror on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now on to the Hermit's Cave, with only about 30 broadcasts of the show surviving radio's yesteryear. Nearly 500 were produced and released for syndication from NBC from 1936 to 1947. This episode released in 1944 next, called The Black Band.
The Mummers in the Little Theater of the Air. Now, the hermit is ready.
Ghost stories. Weird stories. And murders, too. The hermit knows of them all. Turn out your lights. Turn them out. Ah. Have you heard the story? The Black Band, eh? Then listen while the hermit tells you the story, just as it was told to him.
You ask me to tell you the strangest story I've ever heard. I did not witness what happened to Jan van Dyck, for it was long before my time. But I've heard my grandfather tell of it, as did his father before him. It is a story that's been handed down through the generations of our family. And it is believed. You see, this young Hollander, Jan van Dyck, was a relative of mine. When he was a young fellow, he went to Paris to attend the university. He came to France during the time of the French Revolution, and he suffered intensely because of it. The howling crowds, the bloody executions stabbed at the very soul of one as sensitive as Jan van Dyck. He had one friend in this city in the throes of violence, Father Perrichon, who liked the boy and often invited him to his small rooms. One afternoon, Jan came to him.
Sit down, my boy. You look pale and hungry.
I am hungry, Father. But I cannot eat. What I see on the streets, it turns me inside out.
It is sad for one so young to see only this baser side of man. You need sunlight and only small shadows at this time in your life.
Father Perrichon, all of this horror, these scenes of cruelty, they weaken my faith in my fellow man.
Why do you not return to your own country, Jan?
As soon as I finish studying, I shall go. That is why I work such long hours, day and night, to finish the work, so that I may get away and try to forget.
Time will help you, my boy. The warmth and beauty of your own land will blot out the plaster of a grave. You will marry, and your own life will make you forget the Paris you are witnessing today.
I often wonder about the marrying part, I mean. You see, Father, I admire beauty so much.
I know.
Since I can remember, I've dreamed of only one woman for me. She is so beautiful, this girl I dream about. I don't think I can ever find her in real life.
It is the beauty of soul that counts you.
Oh, I know this girl I dream of has a soul of beauty, Father.
Come, my boy. Let us eat of the little I have to offer.
Outside of the visits with Father Perrichon, Jan was a recluse, spending most of his time in the libraries, always surrounded with people, yet always alone, an escape from the realities of the present. One night, he stayed in the library late. While there, a storm arose. But it was closing time, and so Jan was forced to step out into the storm to make his way to his lodgings in the old part of Paris. The lightning gleamed and the thunder rattled loudly through the narrow streets. He crossed the Place de la Grève, the square where the public executions were performed. Just as he was passing the permanent guillotine which had been built there, a bright flash of lightning bathed the square in its cold blue radiance. The dreadful instrument of death loomed before him in all its stark ghastliness.
Oh, how terrible.
Jan shrank back in horror. His heart sickened within him, and he turned shudderingly away. Just then, there was a lull in the storm. Complete silence seemed to fall over the whole city. Then he heard a sound. He turned back, and there on the bottom step of the guillotine sat a woman, crying bitterly.
I beg your pardon. Can I do anything for you? May I not help you?
No one can help me now.
You've lost someone through the guillotine.
Today I lost everyone. They made me come and watch as one by one they died. I wanted to close my eyes, but I could not.
I understand. Horror kept your eyes open. But why stay here now? Why not leave this place?
I have not the strength. I can still see them marching up the steps, the heavy knife being raised, the whistling thud as it fell, each time taking another of my loved ones from me. The blood of my father, my mother, and my two brothers mingled on that platform today.
Have you no place to go?
No. I have no friends left. They too have gone.
You can't stay here. Come with me.
I cannot accept your offer.
I want to be your friend. I promise that no harm shall come to you. Here, let me help you up.
I am very weak.
You're shivering from a storm. You need warm food and dry clothing.
Have we far to go?
Not far. Across the Pointe Neuf. How strange it is tonight. All of a sudden, the storm has ended. And Paris is as silent as a tomb. Here, we turn this way.
You are very kind.
You need a friend. And so do I. How careful, these streets are very narrow. Do not touch the walls, they're covered with mold. Soon we'll reach the stairway leading to my apartment. Can you walk a bit farther?
Oui, for you are fairly lifting me along.
Here, this is my place. I'll carry you up the stairs.
Oh, no.
Of course. You're very light. And you're very cold. You should not have stayed out in the rain. I'll put you down until I find my key. Oh, yes, here it is. In a moment, we shall have warmth, light, and food.
Yeah, stand by the door until I light the lamp. Yeah, there. That's better. Now, come in, please. Now, sit down over here, and I will light a fire. Over here.
What is wrong? Why do you stare?
Sit here. I will have a fire going in no time. Then I will fix you coffee.
I do not know why you are so kind to me.
You are alone and lost. And so am I. Yes. Draw up closer to the fire now.
Why do you still stare at me so strangely?
May I tell you that you are very beautiful. All my life I've dreamed of someone just like you.
I feel as if I had known you for a long, long time.
You're safe now. You need fear no longer.
It may be dangerous for you to harbor me. I am an aristocrat. I'm supposed to be an enemy of the revolution. You may find yourself in prison for giving me shelter.
I'm not a Frenchman. They won't put me in prison.
But I am an aristocrat.
Yes, I know. I could tell. Not only from your beauty, but the black velvet band you wear about your throat. It has a diamond brooch of rare and costly design.
It is all I have left.
Will you tell me your name?
Marie.
And I am Jan van Dirk. Marie, I'll not let them find you.
If they do, they will put me away where you will never see me again.
Listen to me. I am earnest and sincere. All of my life I've been searching for you, Marie. Will you marry me?
Oh, no.
As the wife of a Netherlander, they can't touch you.
You only pity me.
I love you. I want you to marry me, Marie.
It is true. I do feel that we met a long time ago.
And so do I. I've dreamed of you. I've spoken with you. I've looked into your eyes before.
But it is all impossible.
Say my name, Marie.
Jan. Jan.
It is not impossible. I want to marry you because I love you.
Perhaps you will not want me to be your wife when I tell you what happened to me today.
I don't want to hear it. Our lives began when I found you in the Place de la Grève. I'm going out to get a priest, and we'll be married tonight, now.
But the clergy has been forbidden to practice the rites of religion. Those who have not left Paris are in hiding.
Oh, but I have great news to tell you. My only friend in this city is Father Perrichon. Some time ago, he confided in me, told me that he is a priest. I will go and find him now. Marie.
Jan.
You consent?
Oui. For I love you.
Yes, these two. One who had suffered untold horrors that day, and one revolted by the tragedies all about him, met on a dark night. Met and found that they believed they had known each other during some other hour. Met and fell in love on sight. Jan looked into Marie's soft brown eyes, gazed on the pale face, and knew that she was the girl of his dreams. With her consent to marry him, Jan rushed out into the dark night, now silent, foreboding as if the black skies were mourning for the dead. Finally, he arrived at the door of Father Perrichon. He knocked. There was no answer. He tried again. Then he saw a wisp of light through the darkened door.
Father Perrichon, it is I, Jan.
Step inside, my boy, quickly.
Father. Father, I want you to come quickly. I found her.
Found who, my lad?
The girl of my dreams. I found her tonight. I want you to come and marry us now. Father, don't ask me any more questions. Come with me now and marry her.
It's over. We're married. You belong to me now.
Oui. But as long as he permit me to stay.
He? Whom do you mean?
Death. His shadow is always hovering over me.
Why do you keep speaking of death? You're not going to die. We have years and years of life and happiness ahead of us.
I wish it were so. Oh, how I wish.
Marie, come to the window with me. Take one last look at this view of Paris in the nighttime. For I'm going to take you out of this city of death and terror. Out into the country where we can live in happiness and peace.
If it could only be so.
I'm going to make it so.
Tomorrow morning, I'm going out into the country and find a little villa, away from the blood and the hate, out into the sunshine, Marie. It will purify us.
If you could do that, Jan, perhaps. No, it would make no difference. The angel of death is forever with me.
You must not talk so. I will find the villa.
Marie smiled wistfully. Somehow it gave Jan the hope that she would someday forget all the horrors and sorrow which now held her in their grip. They sat at the window looking out over the sleeping city. They sat silent till the gray of dawn came into the sky, until a rosy haze was over the east. It was then that Marie's fears came back twofold. She was alarmed, quickly agitated.
Jan, if you are going into the country, go now. Go now.
I will wait until the sun comes up.
No, it will be too late. Too late, I tell you. Go now at once.
You really wish it? What do you fear?
You know. They will find
me. Never. And they cannot harm you. For you are Madame Jan van Dirk, a Netherlander.
Oh, Jan.
All right, my darling. I will go now. For the sooner I go, the sooner we will be away from all of this.
Oui.
You will be here when I return. You promise?
I promise.
Then I will start at once. By nightfall of this day, we will be away from here, you and me. Starting a new life in the world of peace. Marie, you and I in the world of
peace. Jan left. He walked out into the country. He had no trouble finding a charming place. A little house set in a lovely garden, the whole property surrounded by a high wall. Jan knew that here Marie would forget and be happy again. He rushed back to Paris as fast as he could and up to their little apartment.
Marie! Marie!
Threw open the door. Yes, she had kept her word. She was there waiting for him. Exhausted from the tragedies of the day before, she was lying across the bed, head hanging over the edge, one arm thrown over her face.
Marie, Marie, I found it. I found the most beautiful place you ever saw. A place far from this city of unhappiness. A place that will be heaven for us both. Wait until you see it. Wait till we... Marie? Marie? She doesn't move. She's not breathing. Her hand is cold. No pulse. No pulse.
Marie! She's dead. She's dead. Help! Help! She's dead. She's dead. Marie, she's dead. Help!
They have found her while Jan has been away. They have killed her. Who has done this thing? Will Jan find out, eh? The hermit will tell you before the night is done.
And now, the hermit again.
And now he who tells us the strangest stories ever heard goes on, tells us of what befalls Jan van Dyck after he finds Marie lies dead.
Horrified and frantic, the young boy runs out of the apartment, down the stairs, babbling to himself, crying out in grief and terror, calling for help. And then an officer stopped him.
Here, what is the matter with you?
She's dead. She's dead. I went to the country. I came home and found her dead.
Who is dead and where?
My wife. She's up in our apartment. Come. Come, I will show you.
You are not a Frenchman?
No. My wife. Someone has killed her.
Get hold of yourself. Death is a common thing these days.
But to Marie. They had no right to do this to Marie.
We will investigate.
Over here on the bed. I found her here.
She's dead, all right. You say you left her alive and then found her like this when you come back from the country.
Yes.
Are you sure you did not kill her?
No. No, I loved her. I loved her more than anything in the world.
Let me get a good look at her.
What is it, officer? What is the matter?
How long have you known this woman?
I met her last night, but I've known her forever. I met her last night. We were married a few hours later.
You were married last night?
Yes.
Not a week ago, not 2 days ago, but last night.
Yes, yes.
sit down in this chair. You are half crazed. Sit down and let me talk. Here. Now, listen. Listen carefully. I saw this woman yesterday near sunset. I know who she is.
She's the one I love. She's gone forever.
Listen. I was stationed near the Place de la Greffe.
You saw as I did, weeping.
I will tell the story if you will listen. Down the street near sunset came the howling mob. Crying for blood, intent on the kill. And down the street came the tomber, carrying its victims. Aristocrats whose time had come. The family of La Tarin and the crowds following them. The tumbrel drew nearer the square. The crowd cried out in fury. Then the cart stopped.
Fear, Marie. Do not fear, Philippe. My son, have your eyes upward. Look at the sky and believe in God. We have harmed no one. We have done no wrong. We have never spilled blood. We have never hated.
Your speech is your time is gone. The guilty. Take us to the guilty.
Mama, your eyes in the future, Marie. Look into the eyes of the setting sun. I am ready.
One by one, the family of Monsieur Lafarin walked up to the guillotine. First, Madame, then the boys. Then, Monsieur. And then the daughter. She stood there, her head held high, her eyes on the sun now almost gone. The crowd was silent for a minute. She seemed to frighten them. There was a pause, and then...
What are you trying to make me believe?
I am telling you the truth. I stood at the foot of the scaffold yesterday when this woman in your rooms was guilty.
No! She was alive when I left her early this morning when I went to the country. Late last night we were married. I can prove it.
Look, let me show you. You see this black band around her throat? If I remove it, see. If I did not overread, it would roll to the floor. Now do you believe? Do you believe?
No! No!
A fit of hysteria overcame Jan. It was the beginning of an hysteria that dragged him into madness. He spent the rest of his days in an asylum. The authorities never believed Jan's story. They said he had dragged a corpse into his room and in his madness believed that she was a living person. But to the day he died, Jan insisted that his story was the truth. And Father Perrichon, he wrote in his journals, he too said the girl had been alive on the night after the storm. He set the date of her marriage. But it didn't tally with the hour and date of her execution. So no one believed. But as time goes on, the story has been told and retold in our family. I've often wondered if it were not true after all. Of course, Jan was a relative of mine, and he went insane. So you may think,
too in touch with madness. But it is the strangest story I have ever known.
The black band was around Marie's throat for a purpose, eh? We who have studied the supernatural, we who have delved into the unknown, we know that in this life of ours occur strange things that no mind can comprehend. Yes, turn on your lights. Turn them on. Pleasant dreams.
All characters, places, and occurrences mentioned in the Hermit's Cave are fictitious, and similarity to persons, places, or occurrences is purely accidental.
The Hermit's Cave, on Tuned to Yesterday, a syndicated recording from 1944. And that does it for this hour of horror on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levanier. Thanks for listening.